Bradfield Radio, this is Niccolò Comotti here in Cannes 2015, and today I've got the pleasure to be with Roger Deakins. So Roger, everything started off from painting and then photography, right?
Yeah, it started, I just, at school I just used to paint, and then I went to art college, because I didn't know what I wanted to do really. I know I didn't want a 9-to-5 job. And my father was a building contractor, and I did work on a building sites for summers and stuff, but I didn't want to do that as a career. I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I went to art college, and at art college I met Roger Main, who is a great street photographer. I discovered I loved for, you know, naturalistic imagery, so I stopped painting and started taking photographs. And I'd always loved movies, but I never thought I'd ever get close to actually working in the film business and actually shooting films or being involved at all with movies. But then just gradually those things collided. It was just a matter of accident and luck, really. I was leaving art college and I didn't know what I was going to do, you know, to make a living. Or with my life anyway, and the National Film School opened in England, and I applied, and I did. They said, well, we won't accept you this year, but come back next year and we'll give you a place next year. And so I went there.
But after that you started with documentaries for some years, I think.
I did. I mean, that's what I've always said, and it's true. I did mostly documentaries, but I actually did a couple of dramas during that time and a lot of rock videos. You know, a lot of Meatloaf and
really?
Eric Clapton and Genesis and people like that.
How did you?
And I did a documentary with Mike Radford on Van Morrison, and it was his first visit back to Ireland for like 10 or 12 years, and we followed him around Belfast, and we were wandering down St. Dominic's, you know, which he sings about, and then there was a guy cleaning windows on a ladder, and it was his mate that he used to clean windows. He said, "Hey, Charlie," and whatever it was, I can't remember his name. He said, "Oh, hi, Van," and we were filming all this. It was cool, you know. As well as his concerts in Belfast and Dublin. So, oh yeah, no, it was good times. So I was doing documentaries with different people, and then with Mike. Then Mike got a feature film another time, another place, and I got to shoot his feature film. Mm-hmm. So I just gradually segued into feature films because of that, really. I really loved doing documentaries. I mean, one, it was a huge life experience for me. I mean, I traveled quite a lot. I went to Rhodesia when it was Rhodesia and shot a film about the guerrilla war in Rhodesia, and then I went to Eritrea and did a film in Eritrea where they were fighting for their independence. I sailed around the world on a yacht and made a film about what it was like to be on a yacht 9 months. I did some anthropological work. I did a couple of documentaries in a mental hospital, you know, about schizophrenia, and I wouldn't have exchanged that for anything. The confidence it gave me as a person, you know, my own personal development, I suppose. I don't think I could have gone on a film set like I do now without having had that experience, you know.
What was it like to be on a boat for 9 months?
I didn't like the seasickness, because I did get seasick. But what was it like? Looking back on it, it was absolutely amazing. I mean, I do sort of, if I wake at night, I can visualize some days on that boat. But actually, I know at the time, it was pretty tough. Well, it's pretty tough because I was there with a guy called Noel Smart, who's a sound recordist. And there was two of us there. And we had the crew on the boat as well as make the film. So it was like really hard. And in those days, we had an MPR, Claire MPR. And, you know, you have a battery, heavy battery and a cable. And all this. So you're struggling up on deck where the boat's going all over the place and trying to shoot, you know, something that is a little bit more than pretty shots of a yacht going through an ocean. You know.
In terms of, how can I say, in terms of the different approaches that you have
according to, let's call it, medium. So you were saying about your past as documentary maker, but also even before that, still photography. I just wonder if there's sort of like a common denominator even right now with the idea of like making feature films, because if you think about the rough concept of documentary making is a sort of I connect it to the idea of fluid kind of making, organic filmmaking, whereas scripts are fragmented per nature. So I wonder if there's something, for example, especially in still photography, that you still use as a sort of approach to filmmaking per se, if you still retain something from the old years,
day. Definitely. I mean, I think still, well, you know, I really admire still photography. So I, you know, James Natchway or Alex Webb, I mean, their work is just amazing. I wish I could be either of those guys, you know, because their framing and their sensibility, and I just don't know how they do it. But so you take from stills photography, it's so much about the moment and the frame and that. But then in documentary, I mean, the documentaries I did weren't constructed. They were, you know, you follow a situation and you try and shoot it in a way that you know you later you can cut it into something that makes sense, which is what you're really doing on a feature film. If you watch a block in rehearsal in the morning with the actors, you're doing the same thing. You're reacting to what you see. And now, where can I best put the camera to make this sense, or make sense of this, or enhance what's happening within the scene? So, yeah, I think in a sense, both the discipline of stills photography and documentary, yeah, I mean, it impacts a lot the way I see things now. Definitely,
And link it to the idea of composition, as you said, like, you know, you're looking at the sort of rehearsal and then you also bring, you know, your ideas and concepts. But after making, I mean, you did quite a few films, you have a sort of idea, almost like some tropes to use according to the rough idea of the script. So as like to compare it to another kind of medium, like a composer has, you know, a set chord progression that he knows that he could use. Would you do the same, for example, with a different scene? So you have this sort of idea, sometimes almost a mechanical approach to some ideas, or every single time you just base on the term itself, on the moment itself.
You might do that, you know, the director might do that, or you might do that with a director in prep storyboarding the movie. You might build in sort of things like that. But for me, what I do is much more emotional reaction to thing rather than sort of cerebral reaction to something. I don't really analyze a script and give it. I mean, you know, you might say I don't, but I suppose you do in a sense that you might change a color palette, or you might change, you know, one scene might be active and handheld and another scene might be absolutely just completely observational on a wide shot. You know, there's that kind of thing. You might have that in your head before you start shooting. Yeah, sure, yeah.
It's just the idea, in fact, that you just said about the translation from your approach to then the whole crew following, you know, the kind of technical parts. Because as you said, it can be handheld as well as incredibly orchestrated. So
it depends so much from film to film, because some films, like, you know, working with the Coen brothers, everything's storyboarded in advance, even though it might not be exactly what you shoot. It's all there, down there, and you have a plan. Whereas, you know, I mean, Sid and Nancy or Jarhead or something is all handheld, and you're really totally reacting. I mean, Jarhead, we just shot the rehearsals, and it was totally reactive to what the actors were doing, and then you would just build on it. So it was like a documentary, but then you had a chance to do take two and finesse what you were doing, you know. So, yeah.
Do you consider Barton Fink as a major moment in your career, or is it just the critic's word?
Well, in the sense it was the first film I did with Joel and Ethan. It was significant for me because prior to that I'd had rather an unhappy experience on Rather Big Movie, and I decided I was selling my place in London. I was moving back to Devon, and I might only do a few small films. I wasn't going to, you know. And then I met Joel and Ethan, and they kind of, in a way, restored my faith a little bit in the film industry.
it's an essential moment. Imagine.
No, I think you know, I was kidding myself as if I really thought I was going to give it up. I think I was being, you know, I was kidding myself. But I was intending to move back to Devon, and I had put my house in. I had a house in London, small house in London. I put that for sale. I bought a flat in Devon, and I was. That's what I was going to do, and then. I met Joel and Ethan, and suddenly I moved to America.
And how was the transition from England to America in terms of production?
No, it was incredibly easy. It was amazing when I went to the States how welcomed I felt. That was the thing about it. Yeah, it was quite amazing. It was quite wonderful. I didn't really have a problem. Yeah, no, it was. No, it was great. I guess it was the films I was working in, and it were less, you know, less heavily studio films. They were more independent movies, a lot of them. So I think we have a sort of, I think we kind of similar sense of humor, really. Yeah, you know. I think we do, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. You know, somehow just, I obviously... I don't know, you should ask them. I don't know, I love working with them. They're just nice, very unpretentious, very straightforward, incredibly intelligent, very imaginative, and I love working with them, so I don't know why they will work with me, but they do. I think Hail Caesar was shot over the winter. I think that's 12, actually,
that's
yeah.
12,
I think so, yeah.
Today, is it?
It's always been after, but I think it's always been quite matter of fact, really, but I've always tended to have quite a lot of prep time with them. And prep time is a very, you know, it's, you know, just a slow way of discovering what the film is, you know, and so it's always been quite comfortable actually working with them. I'm not saying not challenging, and not some of the shoots have been very difficult. You know, like True Grit was an incredibly difficult film to shoot because where we were, the weather, the budget, and the restrictions and stuff. But they've always been very, very happy shoots, you know what I mean? Yeah. Comfortable, yeah.
And what's your take, out of curiosity, on CGI?
You know, I mean, I'm still somebody, the less effects work you can do, the better, really. It's not, you know, I mean, effects work can be brilliant, but there's still something about it that's not, doesn't quite ring true, you know? It doesn't matter how good it is. I mean, I felt the effects work that ILM did for us, for instance, in Unbroken, that opening sequence with the plane crash and all that, I thought that was absolutely stunning, the work they did, but there's still something about it that's not quite true, you know?
If you could ask for something that made your life easier on set, tech-wise, you had some sort of, you know, sometimes you wonder, like, I wish there would be that kind of machine that makes this easy. Did you have that kind of thought anytime, or you just also like the idea of the effort into, you know, problem solving?
I mean, I do like the technical challenges of lighting. You know, if you could just shoot everything with natural light, it would be kind of a bit boring, really, apart from the fact that you don't always want it to look like that. But I do like technical challenges. I always do meticulous plans of every set during prep, and I draw down the lighting diagram, and then I'll sit with a gaffer and we'll go through it together and say, well, if we do this, and absolutely meticulous plans for even the smallest set. And I love that mechanical approach. But that's not really what it's about in the end. It's just something I suppose I like doing that.
Do you also shoot around? I mean, like home videos?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a camera now, but I haven't had time to take any pictures. I wish I had. But it's digital now, yeah. I mean, I've got an M6, but I haven't used it much lately. I mean, I would still shoot film, but it's just a matter of having the time and...
What do you think about the different approaches that, say, a European shoot can have as opposed to the American studio?
Really, I guess I'm a bit of both. You know, there's definitely a difference. I mean, you know, but much more of a difference like in the 60s and 60s, probably, wasn't it? 60s and early 70s, you know. I mean, what Raoul Coutard was doing compared with what they were doing in the States, and then later what Robbie Mueller was doing. And you see something like Paris, Texas, and that is so different to what American cinematographer and director would have done with that script, with that story. I mean, you know, there is a different sensibility for sure. But then you could say that also about, you know, Keizu Miyagawa or something. I mean, his work was so different than what was being done in America at the time, you know. But, you know, that, and then that diversity is great. I mean, I think it's a sort of, it's a shame that that is, it's a little less now, the diversity between, you know, the styles of different countries' filmmaking, but also the styles of, for me, I mean, different cinematographers. You know, it's getting a little bit samey, frankly.
In fact, with the advent of technology, especially, you know, the easy kind of way of setting up your film in a way, yeah, with the digital filmmaking, yeah, I thought back in, you know, when it started, that it would have created so many different styles, but instead it kind of got homogenous. Do you know, yeah, why do you think it's like that?
Because, well, I think because, you know, the producers say you don't need to light it, you've got a fast lens, you've got an exposure, and it's become more about getting exposure than it has been about getting, using lighting or lack of lighting in some way and composition and, you know, to create something a little bit more, you know. But that's often, it's a budgetary thing, isn't it? It's a time and budget, and people say, oh, well, we can just shoot, so we'll just do it, you know. It's a shame.
So
who are the main talents for you right now?
It'd be awkward for me to mention some because I know I'd forget some. But there's some great young cinematographers. Yeah, no question about it. But I think I would be wrong to say it's just cinematographers, but don't you think movies in general become homogenized? They've got less personality, you know. It's hard to pick out particular director's work sometimes. Films become action movies and a lot of CG and a lot of fantasy and, you know, those kind of movies. They could be done by anybody, really.
Sam Mendes is doing his second Bond film. Any reason why you're not on board?
Two reasons, yeah. One was Denis was doing Sicario, and the other was the brothers were doing Hail Caesar. And I missed the brothers' last film, Llewellyn Davis, because I'd been doing Skyfall. And I had said to Sam a long time ago, I said, you know, I'd do one, but I'm not going to do the second one. And I talked to the boys about it, and, well, you know, they said, oh, it's all right, they wouldn't do anything till I came back. And then I talked to Joel one day, and he said, I'm sorry, we're getting bored, we're going to have to do a movie. So, you know, it's fine. I was just sort of glad that they asked me back to do Hail Caesar, you know what I mean? Exactly. But, it's kind of split not working with Sam again as well, you know, because I had a really good relationship working with him, so it's difficult when you do that, you know.
But, yeah. I wonder if even these days you sometimes stop by maybe in the middle of a scene and you just actually have, or maybe in prep, and you have particular cinematographers in mind or something pops out, or maybe just still photography as well, if actually there's still artists or cinematographers in specific that you look up to and sometimes you want to create still that sort of feel that they were famous for, or you'd like up to now actually you think you have your own style and you just...
Oh, no, I think you're kind of everything that you've ever experienced pops into your head at one point or another, doesn't it? I mean, you know, like when we're doing Sicario, I mean, I did think of, you know, Melville Films, and I thought of Alex Webb's photography. But, I mean, I could never recreate an Alex Webb photograph. I mean, his work is so brilliant. But, I mean, you know, those images flip through your head, and the colours he uses, and the sort of clarity of his images, and you go, wow, yeah. So, yeah, but there's so many things that go through your... So many influences that sort of buzz through your head at any time, you know. It's not like you're copying something, it's all those things are just there, aren't they, you know, which is the fun of it, isn't it, really, you know. In a way, you're trying not to be aware of the process. It's like when I operate all the time, right, and I couldn't work without operating the camera myself, but the thing about operating is that you want to get to a point where you know, you're not aware of the camera. I mean, in the old days, I mean, I still sometimes I work with a gear head, because as a gear head, there's something that's like really precise, and you can just go like that, walk away, get on. But if you are aware that, okay, I need to turn the right handle three times, and that, you know, if that was something that was technical in your head, you would be lost. But I mean, without boasting, I'm confident enough now, I can get on a camera, I don't have to rehearse, I know that person's going to go like that, and I can do it, and I don't think about the technology. I'm looking at that image through the viewfinder, and that's what I'm doing, you know. So yes, I'm all the time I'm trying to be distanced from the technology and actually connected to what's out there, you know.
You are a well-known master for wide frames, but wide frame photography, but how about the difficulties of framing faces?
Challenge? I think filming is all about filming faces, because I think if you don't have a character, you don't have a movie. You know, I mean, I think that I am my favorite is the wrong way of putting it, but I think that the scene in the kitchen at the end of Sicario, where Benicio is giving Kate the, you know, thing to sign in the kitchen, I think that's the most successful scene in the film photographically, and yet it's like very, very, you know, it's nothing, it's two people at a table sort of thing, but I think for me that works, and that's more interesting and that's more pleasing than, you know, shooting the twilight or the rest of it. You know what I mean? It's that, it's just, I look through the camera doing that and I see Benicio's expression and his performance and that little bit of light that I got a glinting on his eye, and I thought, yeah, that's good. You know, not saying, oh, it was great, but that was good. That gave me a real buzz, and that's what I do the job for, those little moments. You go, yeah, that's special, you know? It's the combination in that little scene at the table, the combination of the light, the frame, and the complementing the performance. And we were having dinner the other night, and Benicio said, that really worked. He turned to me and said, I was really glad, because we weren't talking about it. He just said, that scene at the table, that really worked. He said, just the way that light caught my eye. He said that, you know, one complemented the other, the performance and the feel of the scene. I thought it was really good.
I heard you are a visual consultant now as well.
Well, it depends. I mean, it started off that I was doing a seminar up at Pixar about live action, you know, camera work and lighting and how to light and move the camera on live action, because they were, you know, they wanted their animation to have a bit more of a live action feel. And then so Andrew Stanton, the director of WALL-E, brought me in on that, and I spent a few days with his team, you know, creating references for the opening sequence of WALL-E, where WALL-E's on this sort of like trashed earth, you know, and we did a whole lot of references playing with the amount of atmosphere and all this sort of, and then colors and stuff. And that was basically it. I followed the film through a bit, but I went off to do some other movie. But then Gore Verbinski then asked me on Rango to be involved in the lighting of that. They basically shortlisted the whole film, so I wasn't really so involved as in the shots as in working with Tim Alexander at ILM and in the lighting of that. And I followed that film all the way through, because I had a sort of dedicated link with ILM, and I was shooting True Grit at the time. Well, I was shooting a couple of films, because they were making that over two or three years. But I would follow all the imagery they were creating, and then I'd sort of like Photoshop my notes or little changes and, you know, play around with the images, and we'd go back and forth. And then what happened after that? Then I was asked by DreamWorks to get involved in How to Train Your Dragon. And I spent a lot more time on that, actually, at DreamWorks with all the team. Dean DeBlois, the director, we created a whole wall of references. So every scene had images, reference images for the look of every scene. And then I followed that film all the way through. I was doing live action, but then in between live action I'd go to DreamWorks and we would sit down and look at all the scenes and I was very involved in that, and in the camera movement and everything on that. for me, I mean, my criticism of cinematography sometimes is that you have all, you know, you have too many possibilities, but just because you have a possibility doesn't mean to say you should necessarily use it. Like, you know, when Steadicam was invented, for a few years every film was like, you know, remote heads the same, a camera's going all over the place, and then there's nothing wrong with just sort of sitting there and being on a static shot, you know. So it's a bit like that in animation in DreamWorks. The kind of the maxim was like, okay, you're going to 21 mil lens and the camera's always moving, so even though you're doing a sitting at a table scene, the camera's got to be doing this because it's all 3D and we've got to have all that effect. Well, I discussed it with him, and we started stopping the camera, and then we started not lighting, and then we started just using one light, and they developed a whole new set of lighting tools as we were doing it. And that's because I wanted bounce light and I want simple things, and I wanted that light to hit here and bounce back up. And so, you know, they sort of changed their working patterns. It was really great, it was really fun. Well, you know, they it was almost like they were shooting films like were being shot in America in the 60s, you know, your key light, back light, side light, fill light, kicker, you know, all that. They were doing that. Whereas, you know, I said, we don't need it, let's do it much more naturalistically. So I said, bring in a soft light. And then I said, well, no, just that, that's it, it's lit, you know, one light. And this was like, they'd never done that. So it was kind of interesting. It was quite a discussion, shall I say, to work with darkness and to work on longer lenses and stop moving the camera and just do that instead of doing that, you know. It was really interesting. And then when we did with the same team, with Dean DeBlard Wepting, we did How to Train Your Dragon 2, we could go a lot darker, and it was 3D, but we went a lot longer lenses, and that was really interesting. We actually, in prep for that film, we all went up to Norway and to Svalbard looking at ice patterns, and we travelled across Svalbard on snowmobiles looking glaciers. A bit indulgent, but it was a lot of fun for an animated film, you know what I mean? It was great.
And this was the great Roger Deakins for Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.